I believe in my powers.
I believe in my powers.
I believe in the powers of my teammates.
I believe in the power of my teammates.
I trust in my powers.
I trust in my powers.
I trust in the powers of my teammates.
I trust in the powers of my teammates.
Somebody get this big walking carpet out of my way.
Look, okay, just get any blunt objects together, all right? Get cornered, bash them in the head. That seems to work out.
I mean, what are we, a team? No. We're a chemical mixture that makes chaos.
Gentlemen, I'm Agent Carter. I supervise all operations for this division.
The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
And
angels are love!
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show.
Even in the future, there are cheeseheads with Patrick Tomlinson.
Hello, I'm Sean.
I'm Paul.
And obviously we're here with Patrick Tomlinson. Hello, Patrick.
Hi, everybody. How you doing?
So we're here to talk to you a little bit about your work and yourself, to learn your deep, dark secrets, those that exist. So I believe last year was the Ark came out.
Yeah, Ark came out November of 2015, yes.
And you have the Trident's Forge coming out this year, or just came out?
Trident's Forge came out in April, so April. They're both on the shelves, yes.
So, and then obviously there's a third book that's in the works.
Third book, the working title is Children of the Divide. I'm about 60,000 words into it right now.
So when we met you during your reading, you had mentioned to someone's question, it might have been Paul's question, that there's a big shift in the type of stories that you're telling, right? The arc you mentioned was sort of like a noir murder mystery set on a spaceship. Yep. This new one is almost like a first contact story.
It's very much a first contact colonization, taming a wild frontier sort of action-adventure story, yes.
So why did you want to switch... What was the reasoning for switching it so drastically in terms of the story type?
Well, it's the same world, it's the same, most of the same characters, the ones that survive. But at the same time, I did not want to get locked into doing, what murder is he solving this month sort of things. I didn't have any interest in getting locked into, just one genre. The point of writing the arc in the first place was to write a murder mystery that would appeal to people who like mysteries and thrillers, a much more mainstream audience, with more of a science fiction wallpaper on it, so people who maybe haven't really dipped their toe in the sci-fi genre before would be able to pick this up, and it has all the trappings and tropes of a noirish sort of murder mystery, and it just happens to be set on a 10-mile-long spaceship. So I wanted to do kind of the same thing for another genre, and just keep mixing stuff up with each new book. Like I said, Trident's Forge is really more of an action adventure, although there are mystery elements. Children of the Divide is becoming more of a political thriller in some ways. Yeah.
Interesting. So one of the interesting things that when hearing you read, and I know we asked you a question about this, but we have to ask again, is the new book, the second book, excuse me, Trident's Forge, mixes up the pronouns, because I believe in the very first chapter you introduce an alien species that is very, very alien and has no concept of gender as we understand it, so they use the je and jur forms for the pronouns.
Yes, they don't have he and her pronouns. They just say z and zer for everybody, because they're actually, as I explained briefly in the reading, the Atlanteans are a three-gendered race. They have what we would loosely consider male and female, but then they also have a third, which is called a bearer, which doesn't actually contribute any genetic material, but acts as a womb for the developing young. But the thing with the male and the females is that they, each individual, as long as they're not a bearer, each individual goes through both genders at different phases of their life. So they start out as males, and then they transition into females somewhere around their mid-30s. So, but they don't consider them male and female. They consider them, youth and elders. So that, for that reason, like a lot of the there aren't gender-specific roles exactly. There's more age-defined roles in their society.
So the bearers are a separate track. Once a bearer, you're always a bearer?
Correct. Yeah, they're physically smaller, weaker. They are most the idea behind it is that these are creatures that, that evolved from invertebrates. Like they, it's like if cephalopods, like octopuses or cuttlefish, had made landfall before anything else. And they never developed hard-shelled eggs. So the bearers end up being the place where the eggs are deposited after they've been fertilized in order to keep them moist as they get further and further away from the ocean.
So I like that the example you use is the cuttlefish, because I think of all of the weirdly octopi-looking creatures, the cuttlefish is the most alien of them.
Oh, I love cuttlefish. They're awesome.
They're
creatures.
Really cute, but they look so...
They're just so damn weird, man.
Have you never seen ammonite fossils, though?
Yeah,
I love ammonite fossils and their weird, strange diversity of how they develop these old, these strange protrusions.
They're like an octopus had a baby with a snail. Mm.
What I like about the cuttlefish is that you could pretty easily see them taking an evolutionary track to not only intelligence, but they already hunt in somewhat social situations. You know, like there's some pack mentality to some of them. They just don't live very long. And the other thing is, like, even before I could see like octopi making it onto land, I'd see cuttlefish because of the cuttle bone. Like, they're not vertebrates, but they already have an internal rigid structure that evolution is you know, slowly granting them. So I could see that becoming something that you know, absent fish, absent vertebrates, probably would have had the best shot. And so that's where I took off from when I was developing this species.
That's so cool.
So tell me about the building of this new world and the ideas and models you used and how you go about actually constructing world. Because the arc you had written originally as a self-contained murder mystery on the spaceship that's going to the planet, but the actual... And revelations about what the planet is important to the plot, but the actual planet itself doesn't feature in it. But here and here, actually got to build not only the species with its pronouns and its interesting genders, but you have to actually build the actual physical geography and nature of the planet. So why don't you talk about how you went about doing that?
Well, that was an awful lot of fun, because the star system that the Ark was headed to is Tau Ceti, and that's a real star system.
Right.
In fact, it's about 12, almost 13 light years from us. And we know an awful lot about it. We know how big the star is. It's about 75% Earth's, or not Earth's, about 75% of our sun's mass. Mm-hmm. It's about half or a little bit more of the sun's luminosity. Mm-hmm. And we know already, confirmed, there are five planets around it. Three of them rocky worlds that are way, way inside the habitable zone. And then another one a little bit further, or a couple more a little bit further out. So, but there is a big hole in the known number of planets in Tau Ceti that sits right in the middle of the habitable zone. So I just created a world and just plopped it right in the Goldilocks zone, and that's Tau Ceti G, which is where the story takes place. A couple of other interesting things that we know about the Tau Ceti system is it is about 1.5 billion years older than our solar system. The star itself is quite a bit older. It comes from a previous generation of stars, so it is fairly metal poor, which basically means anything in astronomical terms, anything past lithium, there just isn't nearly as much of it present in the star or in the surrounding protoplanetary disk.
Right.
And the other neat thing is the surrounding protoplanetary disk is 10 times denser than the disk that we have around our solar system. So there's 10 times more leftover material. There's 10 times as many asteroids, 10 times as many comets. There's just a lot more stuff there, which, considering the star is metal poor, doesn't make any sense, because we would have expected there to be less stuff like that. You know, there shouldn't be that much dust surrounding it. So whether or not that was captured material from maybe another star that had gone off, or, you know, while it was traveling through, or it just produced a lot more stuff than we anticipated it would, we don't know. But because of that, you have this world that is even the fictional world that I came up with. It's about the same size as Earth. It's actually a little bit larger in circumference, but it's a little bit less dense because it doesn't have nearly as much iron in its core. Its gravity is just a tiny bit less than ours because of the fact it's a little bit less dense and it's pushed out more. Mm-hmm. It's and because it has less iron, it has, and it's a billion years older, it's now starting to, the dynamo's slowing down, it's the tectonic movements of the continents is not as much, so mountains are no longer building themselves up, they're being gradually eroded away. But while the plain, while the planet is largely plains and rolling hills, it also has incredibly deep valleys, and it has canyons that run way, that have been cutting into the landscape for an extra billion years. It has massive cave systems because, again, rainwater has been eroding limestone for an extra billion years. So this planet is not so spectacular looking up, but looking down, it's amazing. So just some, you know, and those were all things that came about from just a logical exploration of the known facts of the Tau Ceti system. Like
that sounds really cool, doesn't it, Sean?
It sounds like a lot of fun. So I want to switch tracks just a little bit. I know Paul's wheelhouse is world building, so he could talk your head off about building worlds forever.
Sorry.
But if I recall correctly, you do comedy.
I am a stand-up comedian.
For a living? Or a semi-living?
Yeah, well, I do stand-up comedy for a living in the same way that I write books for a living. They're both contributing, so...
They both help.
Yeah.
And I know you bring a little bit of comedy into your work, and I'm curious...
I'm told that.
I wouldn't describe your works as explicitly comical works, mm-hmm. but they certainly bring in the comedy. And I'm curious, I mean, as somebody who's worked in stand-up and who is obviously writing novels, how they both interact with one another at all, if they do?
Oh, it's I don't even see them as being different disciplines.
Oh, okay.
They're both writing. They're both the same. They're both performing using the written or spoken word. They're both... trying to find ways to reach audiences, you know, in by flexing their muscles, their mental muscles, I should say. I don't see what I do as a comedian and what I do as an author as being different things. They both rely on my wit. They both rely on me being as succinct and precise as possible in a lot of ways. They both rely on my ability to edit myself. They both require that I am very that I conserve my words and I give each of them that I decide to use the most maximum amount of impact. And they both inform, you know, they inform each other. Like my dialogue writing has gotten within novels has gotten drastically better since I started doing comedy because I'm always talking and I'm always thinking in spoken word. I'm always thinking about, you know, how people converse and the back and forth, you know. So I think that my dialogue between characters and my characterizations have become much more natural than they had been before I started doing comedy a few years ago.
Oh, I was under the misimpression you've been doing comedy a lot longer than you've been
doing
fantasy. That you came to it basically as a comedian.
No, I started out writing sci-fi in 2009 was when I first started really putting, I'd say pen to paper, but when I really first started putting fingers to keyboards, and then I only took up stand-up comedy in 2012.
Interesting. So, random question. Why? What made you decide ultimately to go into stand-up?
I got divorced, and I could either do stand-up or end up on the evening news. So I went with...
straight up.
That's the direction I took. Yep.
Yeah, that sounds like a very constructive direction. Okay. Mm. All right. Paul, you want to jump?
Yeah. So you've been working on these couple novels. What are the forms of science fiction as far as... length stories, novellas, one that have you considered writing or looking to write to expand your writing chops?
Well, the very first novel I wrote, I started back in 2009. It's called A Hole in the Fence. It is a straight up sci-fi comedy, much in the vein of like Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide books,
right.
Or maybe to a lesser extent Terry Pratchett and his Discworld novels. And so, like the comedic stuff, like I've had an appreciation for stand-up comedians for as long as I can remember. I just hadn't ever tried performing it until a few years ago. But the first novel I wrote, like I said, is this thing called Golden Fence. My agent actually has it out on submission right now, so we're hoping to find a home for it. I'm also, during the reading this morning, I'd read a little bit from a novella that I'm writing that's set in that same universe, but set about 100 years prior to it with totally different characters, just an aside, which actually grew out of a single line joke that's in the book about how the military stopped using autonomous war androids because one of them just decided to go off and join a community theater one day and stopped wanting to kill people, which I loved because it was a total inversion of the trope of, you know, oh, these killer robots are going to come and kill us all. No, instead it's like, oh, the killer robot doesn't want to do its fucking job and instead is more humane than humans are, so which caused a big problem for the military. But anyway.
Yeah. Okay, so that's what you're hoping will be your next project. Are you working on anything else?
He's working on the third.
The third of this particular series.
The arc series. I'm about halfway through the third book in that. The Hole in the Fence sci-fi comedy novel is a completely separate thing.
Right.
It has no connection at all. That book's done. It's out on submission. We're trying to find a home for it.
Okay.
Hopefully with one of the big five, but we'll see. You know.
Sure.
And then, yeah, I started writing a novella for Tor, you know, their novella imprint. We'll see if they want it when it's all completed. And if not, it'll be a nice little thing to add in for fans later on. Should a Hole in the Fence get picked up?
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's dive into another avenue here, which is related to this, which is, I mean, so we've got the sci-fi comedy, we've got you're writing First Contact stories, a sort of political thriller, and a sort of murder mystery, neo-noir kind of thing. What are some other avenues you hope you might be able to explore in terms of, like, genre styles and types?
Well, I wrote a high seas, high fantasy. It was actually the second book that I wrote, and I had a lot of fun with that. And that one was really set up to kind of kick off a new world. Mm-hmm. Actually, 12 new worlds arranged in a pearl necklace around a star, which is actually a sleeping goddess. But anyway,
Wow.
But that one needs a lot of rewriting. I need some free months to go back and really dig through that one.
Sure.
Again. But I would like to explore. I didn't want to get locked into writing a murder mystery series one after the other after the other. I don't necessarily want to get locked into being known as just a sci-fi writer or even a sci-fi comedian. You know, I'd like to see what else is out there. Although that's a very, very tricky needle to thread these days.
So what do you read? What do you like to read in the sci-fi genre? What turns you on and makes you say, okay, I love reading this. I need to get back to my own work
something that's good. I picked up that first Leviathan Wakes of the Expanse series and just burned through those things. more near-term, Ramiz Naam and his Nexus trilogy I consumed very, very quickly. I really enjoy the Old Man's War series by Scalzi. That's been fun watching that develop over the last few years here. Let's see, what else has really grabbed my attention lately? Mirror Empire by Cameron Hurley, then Empire Ascendant, and the third book's coming out shortly. Those have been that's some dark stuff. Holy cow! She does not mess around, and so that's been really fun to read. I don't know. I've been bouncing around with a lot of stuff. I just started listening to Marcos Clouse and his Terms of Enlistment. You know, that series. I read things in my off time, and then I also started listening to audiobooks while I work out because I do like half marathons, and I like to do some endurance running. Well, I don't actually like to do it, but I like the results.
Yeah,
the results
of my body when it's done. So I listen to a couple of audiobooks a month, and I try to read at least a couple of books a month. And especially now that this is my job, you know, trying to keep up with what's in genre, what audiences are responding to, what's selling well, what's getting recognition from awards committees. You know, like all these things are important things for me to know now. So I try to get through as many books a year as I can now.
Excellent.
And in a wide range too. Like I tried not, I try not to stick to one subject for too long. And I am trying to be a lot more conscientious about who I'm reading now, because I'm trying to read more broadly. Because there was a blog post, I think it was last year, where someone had, I don't recall who it was, but she had challenged everyone not to read any straight white males.
That was Tempest.
Tempest, yes, yeah. Okay. Anyway, she had challenged everyone not to read any straight white males, and I'm like, well, come on. And I looked at my bookshelf, and I'm like, all right, she's got a point. I've been trying to pick up stuff from people of different genders, different identities, orientations, different parts of the world, and it's, some of them have paid off immensely. The Three Body Problem, from that won the Hugo last year. Like I may not have picked that up before, but I'm super glad I did, because it's an incredible book. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff like that that I'm glad I'm deliberately expanding my horizons.
Yeah, I think that's something that's really easy to just get sort of trapped in your own little circle without ever thinking outside.
Yeah, and you're not, and with unless you're actively thinking about it.
Yeah, we were talking about that on the panel I was just on. If you don't force yourself to do that, then it's easy to write, hey, just read 10 straight white males in a row. Yeah. Like, maybe not. Maybe that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And being a straight white male, when I read that Highland, don't read straight white males, like, hey, time out. But, the point she was making was a very valid one. And it was helpful for me. And helpful for hopefully the way I end up writing and representing people in my fiction. So,
yeah, excellent. Well, okay. So, where can folks find you and your work?
You can find my work on broadly speaking, PatrickSTomlinson.com. There's links to my books there, to like Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all that. You can also see some of my more recent comedy skits and stand-up performances as I'm able to film them, which is a kind of hit or miss proposition. and I also run a blog where I throw firebombs at politics. So that's a lot of fun.
He lives in Wisconsin and the land of Scott Walker.
Sorry.
Oh, I hate that man.
If it makes you feel any better, I live in the state that has Voldemort at his present. Yeah. So I got Rick Scott.
Oh, he's a lizard person. I don't know if you knew that.
He's literally Ralph Fiennes from the Harry Potter movies.
Yeah, no, yeah. I wrote an article about how it was discovered that he was actually just a bundle of snakes that was impersonating a human being. So
in Florida, that is entirely possible.
Oh yeah. No, the whole thing, he's denying global warming not because he's stupid, it's because he's trying to raise up the Everglades and so he can breed his serpent army. That's a real thing. I have primary sources on all of that stuff. Anyway.
I believe you. Some of it involves really fuzzy YouTube video analysis, I'm sure.
It's fine.
Perfect. So it's PatrickSTomlinson.com.
PatrickSTomlinson.com. Also, you can find me on Facebook because I have an author page and a personal page. And you can find me on Twitter at Stealthy Geek.
At Stealthy Geek.
Yep.
Easy to remember.
Mm-hmm.
Well, perfect. Well, thanks very much, Patrick, for coming to talk to us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Sure, not a problem. And on that note, awkward ending and scene. Our intro and outro music comes from Nocturnia by Psychedelic Pedestrian. You can find out more about them on freemusicarchive.org, including the full version of the song. We obviously made some edits to the song, including sound effects and, of course, shortening the length.
You can also support us by going to patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. If you'd like to send us a suggestion, you can do so at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com. You can also go to our website, skiffyandfanty.com, and check out the little suggested topic form at the top there. You can also just send us emails. You can also find us on Twitter at skiffyandfanty or on Facebook at The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Just search for us on there. Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you next time.